All right, well, we'll be going to the 30th chapter of Genesis this morning, missing again Bruce being with us. He was supposed to continue with his thoughts on all the world, but it's evidently not the Lord's will that he do that today. Again, who knows the wisdom of our God and his providential work. But hopefully, Lord willing, he will be back next Lord's Day and continue with that, those thoughts again. One thing about it, if it's not of God, it's of the world. And if it is of the world, it's not of God in the proper sense of that understanding. But pray for Bruce, again, not only that he might recover his health, but especially that the Lord would guide him in his studies of that particular subject. Genesis chapter 30, and when Rachel saw that she bare Jacob no children, Rachel envied her sister and said unto Jacob, give me children, or else I die. And Jacob's anger was kindled against Rachel. And he said, am I in God's stead, who hath withheld from thee the fruit of the womb? And she said, behold, my maid Bilhah, go in unto her, and she shall bear upon my knees, that I may also have children by her. And she gave him Bilhah, her handmaid, to wife, and Jacob went in unto her. And Bilhah conceived and bare Jacob a son. And Rachel said, God hath judged me, and hath also heard my voice, and hath given me a son. Therefore called she his name Dan. And Bilhah, Rachel's maid, conceived again, and bare Jacob a second son. And Rachel said, with great wrestlings have I wrestled with my sister, and I have prevailed. And she called his name Naphtali, or Naphtali. When Leah saw that she had left bearing, she took Zilpah, her maid, and gave her Jacob to wife. And Zilpah, Leah's maid, bare Jacob a son. And Leah said, a troop cometh. And she called his name Gad. And Zilpah, Leah's maid, bare Jacob a second son. And Leah said, happy am I, for the daughters will call me blessed. And she called his name Asher. And Reuben went in the days of wheat harvest and found mandrakes in the field and brought them unto his mother Leah. Then Rachel said to Leah, give me, I pray thee, of thy son's mandrakes. And she said unto her, is it a small matter that thou hast taken my husband, and wouldest thou take away all my son's mandrakes also? And Rachel said, therefore he shall lie with thee tonight for thy son's mandrakes. And Jacob came out of the field in the evening, and Leah went out to meet him and said, thou must come in unto me, for surely I have hired thee with my son's mandrakes. And he lay with her that night. And God hearkened unto Leah, and she conceived and bare Jacob the fifth son. And Leah said, God hath given me my hire, because I have given my maiden to my handmaid. And she called his name Issachar. And Leah conceived again, and bare Jacob the sixth son. And Leah said, God hath endued me with a good dowry. Now will my husband dwell with me, because I have borne him six sons. And she called his name Zebulun. And afterward she bare a daughter, and called her name Dinah. And God remembered Rachel, and God hearkened to her, and opened her womb. And she conceived and bare a son, and said, God hath taken away my reproach. And she called his name Joseph, and said, the Lord shall add to me another son. So as we read these words, of course, beginning actually with verse 31 of chapter 29, we see all the sons of Jacob born except for one. Later on, Rachel will indeed, and it's interesting here, she said, "The Lord shall add to me another son." And we'll get into that later on as we go, but there was another son born. The last of them was Benjamin. But he was born after they went back to the land of Canaan. All of these were born in Chaldea, but Benjamin will be born in the land of Canaan. But God indeed did add to her another son, and it, again, just an interesting sidelight here. Back up in verse 1, Rachel envied her sister and said unto Jacob, "Give me children or else I die." But when that second son of was born unto Rachel, what happened? She died. She died in the birth of Benjamin. In fact, she named him Ben-Oni, which means the son of my pain. Jacob changed his name to Benjamin. So, but anyhow, it's just, some things are just kind of interesting, you know, the way thing God works in these things. But one of the things that, again, appears to me very strongly, first of all, Jacob is a type of the church. We see that God pictures his work with Israel in general in Jacob, as we said, much more than any of the other patriarchs. So we see this, but the thing that appears to me is the chaos that's involved in this. First of all, Jacob sees Rachel and he loves Rachel, and he never intended to have two wives. Never did he envision that. But through the subtlety and deception, he was given his Leah first before he received Rachel. And because of that, again, he has two wives. And I doubt if Jacob ever envisioned himself having children of four different wives. Never envisioned having not only two wives, but he never envisioned having four wives, JT. I don't know how we reconcile some of these things. Again, except that God is merciful, isn't he? And the fact is that out of this chaos, first he's given Leah instead of Rachel, then he gets Rachel, and then Rachel, the one that he favors, bears no children, and the one that he did not favor bears him four sons, and then Rachel comes in and gives him her handmaid to wife, and this handmaid bears him two sons, and then Leah comes along, and although she's already born him four sons, she gives unto him her handmaid, and this handmaid bears him two sons, and then Leah herself begins to childbearing again, and then finally, right down at the end, we find that Rachel herself bears a child, and again, with the expectation of bearing another son, and again, that would complete the children, or at least the sons of Jacob, from whom the nation of Israel was composed. But again, out of all of this chaos and And I would call it, and Brother Dale, you can correct me on this if you wish, but I call it some confusion that all of this has taken place. And yet, out of all of that, God brings forth His purpose. He fulfills His purpose. The wisdom of God, again, is beyond our comprehension. And if we had to do it ourselves, we wouldn't do it that way. But, you know, we ask ourselves, or I ask myself oftentimes, well, Lord, why did you do it that way? Well, again, I think the answer is simply because it could not be done according to man's way. It could not be accomplished according to man's thinking in such a fashion. It is only God that can bring these things to pass. The Almighty, all-knowing, all-wise God is the only one that can do it. And in so doing, it completely takes away the pride of man and brings man down to a place of humility, and it exalts God to the place that He is worthy of in our minds and in our hearts. It's just marvelous to see how God works. And, of course, most of us here have read the history of Israel as it is recorded from this point on to the times of Jesus Christ. And this continues. We've already gone through the genealogy of Christ, and we've seen how that Rahab comes in there, and Ruth comes into the playing, and all these people that we would never ever envision in our wildest dream. You see, what we would think is that God would not use anybody except the most perfect. But no, instead of that, He brings in all of these different elements. And out of all of that it would appear to us to be indeed chaos and confusion. And it's been that way. It is that way all the way through the Old Testament scriptures. As God deals with Israel, what a mess. And it reminds me, of course, of what Job said in the 14th, is it the 14th? I believe it's the 14th chapter. No, I'm sorry. Yeah, it is. The 14th chapter. In verse 4. He asks a question, and then of course he answers the question. Who can bring a clean thing out of an unclean? And the answer is not one. But God can bring a clean thing, so to speak, out of an unclean, but not. And then don't misunderstand this. Not even God Himself can declare that something is clean that's not clean. Now, again, don't misunderstand me. When I say that He can't declare it to be, what I'm saying is, even in the eyes of God, and in reality, something that is unclean is just unclean. It can't be clean. Something that is unclean cannot be clean in itself. It has to be changed. You understand what I'm saying? Even God, and that's what the big mistake in the so-called Christian religion today comes down to, what they're saying is that God is declaring them to be clean when they're unclean, but just because they think that He has declared them to be clean, yet they're still unclean, that it's they're clean. I don't know that I hope that doesn't sound like double talk, but I hope you understand what I'm saying and understand it. The fallacy that's in that, in other words, again, in the terms of Scripture, we are a new creature. We're not the same. I was listening this past week, or maybe it was the Saturday before, but I was listening. We've been talking about Brother Conrad Merle and the fact that he has passed and gone out of this world into the next. But I was listening to one of his sermons, one that I remember quite well, that he preached at St. Louis, Missouri some years ago. And I don't know, I'm considering playing that tape here one day. But he's talking, his sermon is out of Isaiah, look unto the rock from which you are hewed and the pit from which you're digged. And I think it's an excellent sermon, but not that it says, he says anything different than what we already know, but it needs to be emphasized today that no, we're not the same. As the Apostle Paul says, such were, that's past tense, such were some of you, but now what are you? You're washed, you're clean. And that's the great mistake. That it's so sad that so many of the preachers that are supposed to be preaching the truth of God's Word cannot see that, or if they do, then, oh, what can we say? God have mercy on them? I just don't know. It's scary to think, especially if they really see it, and then they continue to mislead people into thinking that they can be said to be clean and not be clean, that they just continue in that deception. But the joy is that God brings cleanness instead of uncleanness. Those two things are diametrically opposed to each other. I had a good visit with the Whites and Brother Ken and myself and Brother Kyle sat at the table for quite a while and talked about some things, but one of the things that we talked about was this very idea that God would allow His people to remain unclean. And just think. But that's the way it goes. Some people believe that faith is just believing that I am saved, regardless of whether there's any evidence of that salvation. We have believed, and therefore we have faith. But here we have God is bringing out of something that is confused and chaotic. He brings order out of it. And, as we look at the overall history of the church, do we not see the same thing even today? So where is our hope? Our hope is the same as it was back in the days of Jacob when all of this was taking place. His confidence was not in that everything was done perfectly on his part, but his hope was that God was able to bring that clean thing out of an unclean. Now, are there some lessons to be learned here in some, I guess I would call them individual lessons to be learned in these things? Well, one of the things that I've thought about even in the past is that when Rachel saw that she bare Jacob no children, Rachel envied her sister and said unto Jacob, "Give me children or I die." It used to be that women desired to have children above everything else. That didn't matter what else they had or didn't have. They desired to have children. And it still is that way to some degree because, it doesn't matter how long a woman goes without bearing a child before she gets too old that she cannot bear a child. There's very few of them that do not desire to have a child. Why is that? Because it's natural, isn't it? It's just as natural for a woman to want to have a child as it is for her to live and breathe. And why is that? Because it's the will of God. From the very beginning, right? Be fruitful and multiply, right? That's the will of God. And now, does he withhold some people, some late women, from having children? Yes, it does happen. But usually, and again, there are exceptions to this, there's some that become so hardened and their minds are so evil against God that they have no desire. In fact, they hate the idea of having a child. But nevertheless, for the most part, the longer a woman goes without bearing children, the more vehemently they desire to have children. Well, again, that's the way that it ought to be, because God has determined that was one of the main purposes of bringing my husband and wife together was to bear children. But is there a spiritual lesson in that? And I believe there is, because the church is the bride of Christ. The church is the wife of the Lord, and the purpose of that is to bring forth children. And so, again, the church that doesn't care whether or not there is any additions to it of children, bringing in children, I don't believe the Spirit of the Lord is really there.
He said, and bear fruit.
Sir?
He said, and bear fruit.
And bear fruit, yes. And be fruitful, yes. in bearing. But yet, who does it depend upon? It does depend upon God. Now, here is Rachel. First of all, she envies. That's not a good thing, is it? Is that a reason for desiring to bear children? Is this because you envy somebody else? But how many times do we find that to be true as far as individual churches are concerned? One church, it seems, you know, Lord is blessing with children over there, and another church, he's not blessing with children. Is it right to envy that church that is bearing children if God withholds the fruit? But again, it is God that withholds the fruit. Now, again, no church that is spiritual in nature is going to use that as a cop-out, as we would put it today. In other words, a reason to not desire children. If we desire children, if that's what we look for and hope for and pray for, then certainly it's good. But we shouldn't do it just because we envy somebody else, because, well, they've got more than we have. That's not a reason. What Rachel should do is to be faithful to her husband. And that's what we should do, is to be faithful to our husband. He loves us. And Rachel knew this. In fact, Rachel, above all people, ought to have known that Jacob loved her above everything else. Even at the expense of not loving his other wife so much. And Rachel should have just been content to take it to the Lord and not envy her sister on these things. But it was good, on the other hand, that she did desire children, but she went to Jacob and she says, "Give me children or I die." Now, something about this word "die." What does the word "die" mean? What is death? It's a cessation, isn't it, of life? But that cessation of life can come in different ways. I mean, there are a lot of people that are, quote, alive, unquote, today. In other words, they're breathing, they're walking around, but they really don't have any life. Right? In fact, we've coined a phrase, or a phrase has been coined. I don't know who "we" is, but that phrase has been coined. You know, sometimes if people are beating something to death and going over and over and over, and you know, say, "Well, get a life." If they're not happy, you know, if they're not happy about something in their life, or you know, complaining and belly aching and groaning and all that kind of stuff, that's what we say. Well, get a life. Forget all this other stuff and just live. Certainly, there is that death that Rachel experienced, as we've already noted, in her later life. In fact, I don't know, offhand, I don't know how old she was, but she wasn't very old when she died. And in some ways, of looking at it, it was a tragic thing, but nevertheless, it gives us some reason for thought. But it says, "Or else I die." You know, if a family, for instance, does not have offspring, does not have children, what happens eventually to the family? dies out, doesn't it? Well, do you understand that the same thing is true with the church? If you don't have children, and I'm not talking about necessarily physically, I'm talking about spiritually, if God doesn't bring people into the church, new converts, new children into the church, eventually it dies. And I'm sad, sad to say today that there are many churches that are, as it were, dying. Now, there is also, of course, a death where there really is no reason to live. And many churches today, of course, no matter how many souls that they have, they're dead. A good example is the church at where? Sardis, right? Well, thou hast the name, what? That you live in. But you're dead. You can die spiritually. Now I'm thankful to say that as far as I can determine, and I hope I'm not wrong on this, but as far as I can determine, we're not dead spiritually. I am so thankful for that. But you know, it does greatly concern me. I concern myself about the fact that it seems like, you know, if God does not add new children to us, what's going to happen? It will die. This church will be gone. It will not exist any longer. We love Brother Marvin Kernut. Of course, Brother Marvin has considered himself or called himself a primitive Baptist all, I guess, nearly all of his life. Somebody asked, who was that? No. Anyway, somebody asked one of the preachers asked somebody one time, said, well, how long have you been a Christian? He said, well, all my life. He said, well, I think that's a little too long. But, no, it wasn't Brother Moore, honey. So don't.
Well, I heard you say that in Louisiana. I mean, you might have heard someone else say that.
So anyway, my point is that you can die spiritually, and you can die as far as just physical existence is concerned. And I concern myself because most of us, let's face it, we're not very young. I don't know how old Brother Burris is. What are you? 67? Okay, well, you and Bruce are... No, anyway, doesn't matter. But the point is that Joel and Medell and their kids are just about, you know, they're the young ones. And even Joel's not a spring chicken. I hate to remind him of that, but... you know, I look at my children, and I mean, Stan is 1 year from being 60 years old. He'd be 50. I guess he 59? Anyway, somewhere close in there. He's 58. He'll be 59. Anyway. But the point is this, that we're not going to live on this earth forever. And most of us have not got, regardless of what else there is, most of us just don't have many more years to be on this earth. So you understand what I'm saying here. But give me children or I die. Rachel, of course, her first thought is that that's her reason for living, is those children. Well, that's our reason, really, for living. Now, in a sense, of course, all of us are what? We're children. That's the only way you can enter into the kingdom of heaven, is to become as a little child. That's it. So, in that sense, we're all children. But again, one of our great desires always is and always will be, give me children, or we're going to die. This church is not going to be there. Anyway, going back, what I started to say about Brother Marvin a while ago, he belonged to a Primitive Baptist church up at Longview, and in the last year, they finally sold that building and disbanded it, as it were. There wasn't really anything to disband. I think there was two of them left. And one, he was here in Houston, and the other one was up there. And there just was nothing, nobody there. So they finally just considered it gone. And sold the building, and they had. But they're not the only ones. As much as I hate to say it, where Brother Conrad was, the pastor there for years and years, and where there was such a great conference for 40 years, there was a conference that was held there that people came from everywhere and was blessed there and enjoyed the fellowship and the preaching. There was some wonderful preaching that went on there. And yet, I lose track of time. 4 years ago, we attended the last service, the last conference that was held there, and as of now, as far as I know, there's no church there at all. But again, go back and look at the churches, the letters to the seven churches of Asia. Brother Dale, how many of those are still in existence? Been gone a long, long time. So, there's more than one way that you can die or die out. And how many? There's the church in Carthage, down to 8 people total, including Brother Barney and Sister Sharon. How long, much longer will it exist in any form at all? Only the Lord knows. But again, those that are there, they're all older people. Every one of them are older people. They don't have, we've at least got Joel and Medell here, but they don't have any young people at all. How long will it exist? And how many other churches are there in the same situation? But is this not, again, a sign, an indication that God is about through with this mess? As I've said before, another thing that's dying out is pastors. I'm talking about true pastors. Again, we have to have to kind of, we shouldn't have to make those things, we shouldn't have to emphasize what we're talking about, and yet we do, because in the eyes of so many people, and you hear it from some today, they think that we're in a spiritual revival. And why do they think that? Because there's so many people that name the name of God. But if they understood what Paul said to Titus, with their mouth, what do? They bless God, but in works they deny. And that seems to be what they can't understand. But again, Rachel envied her sister and said unto Jacob, give me children or I die. Sometimes people blame the wrong thing, right? Sometimes people blame the pastors of a church because they're not growing. But isn't the type there for us throughout the Old Testament? How many of the prophets, for instance, had a great following? Oh no, instead of having even a considerable following, as far as we're told in the scripture, for the most part, they were trying to kill them, and did kill them. And again, I don't mean to take away, some people would charge me with doing this, but I don't mean to take away responsibility. That's not the issue. The issue is met with us right here. Rachel wanted children, but she went to the wrong place. She's going to Jacob, when I don't think there was any neglect, if you will, on Jacob's part. It all comes down to this. It's of God. And I think I can say about every one of us here, I'm talking about adults and members of the church, I don't think there's no doubt in my mind that we would not rejoice and that we desire to see God add to the church. But we do want legitimate children, don't we? We want children of the Lord. I do. I want people that really love God. I don't want people to come in as we'll have seen over in Jeremiah and in Lamentation and in Ezekiel and other places. I don't want to bring in the uncircumcised of heart. Why not? Because all that is trouble. That is division in the church. What I want is those that love God, that are born of the Spirit of God, that have a teachable spirit and a spirit of love toward one another, and are of one heart and one mind. Now, if that's not what comes, then I don't want them. It's just that simple. I'm sorry if that sounds if that sounds harsh or something, but it's the truth. But I would dearly love to have how many? Really wouldn't matter, would it? Dorothy kind of chides me a little bit sometimes about when we first started out. My whole idea was, man, if I ever got up a congregation of 100 or 125, it'd be time to divide them and start a new church. Well, I haven't had to face that so far, but anyway. Yeah, she said I should have set my sights a little higher than that. But I would love to see. It would be such, first of all, such an humbling experience to see God add truly saved souls to the church and to the fellowship. But my prayer is to Him. I'm not expecting Brother Jerry or Brother Dale or JT or Bruce. I'm not expecting anybody to do that except God. Now again, I'm perfectly well aware that God uses our testimony to bring people in to the church. But that's what's so sad. First of all, you've got to have somebody to hear your testimony. And secondly, they have got to be inspired by that testimony. And the only one that can inspire them and the only one that can give them is God. And I believe, again, that our own attitude is just like Rachel's. Give me children or we die. Now, I am thankful. And this is one of the reasons that I am so thankful to God for the ministry that we've had in those islands called the Philippines. Because there is a real sense, whether you have thought about it or not, there is a real sense in which those people are our children. Now, they can't be here with us except for one of them. But they can't be with us in person physically, but I can tell you that there are hundreds of them, if not thousands of them, that are with us in heart and mind and spirit. And so I tell you that I'm thankful. And that's another reason why I'm so enthusiastic about helping those people, because they are our children. And they look to us in that sense as though we were their, as it were, parents. And we need them. I do. I need them. And I'm thankful for the day that I got the first letter from over there. And I'm thankful that those three men would not let me just say, I don't want to come. Because that's what I told them when they first asked me to come over there. That was my immediate reaction. I'm not interested. But I'm thankful that they didn't say, okay, well, that's all right. Just go on, man. But those are our children in a real sense of the word. We supported them and continue to support them. And as long as we're a church, I hope and pray and trust that we will continue to support them every way that we can. Again, I've been everywhere I go, you know, people are asking me, they say, well, when are you going back to the Philippines? And my answer is, well, I don't know. Because right now we're at a point to where, you know, we have to decide whether it's more important for me to go over there, spend the money to go over there, or to stay here and send that money that we would have spent for me going over there to help them. But I can tell you that many of them would forfeit the money for themselves just to get me to come over there. But again, it's in the hands of God. And I have to believe that our great God and Savior, in His providence, will guide both them and us. And that in the end, it will all be according to His will, and it will be pleasing to Him. But yes, give me children, or else I die. And Jacob's anger was kindled against Rachel, and he said, am I in God's stead, who hath withheld from thee the fruit of the womb? Now, we're out of time, but here's something I just want to mention right quick. And maybe I'm spiritualizing here a little, to some degree, but we don't want illegitimate children again. And just as Abraham and Sarah decided, you know, well, maybe God wants us to do it this way. And so Sarah gave to Abraham who? Yeah, her handmaid. And Ishmael was born. But Ishmael was not of the promise, was it? So Rachel decides, if I can't have children myself, well, here's another way to go about it. Now, isn't it amazing again how that God overcomes? He is able to overcome all of our foolishness and our foolish thinking. Now, were these children of Bilhah and of Zilpah, were they equal? Can I use that word? Or were they as legitimate as those that were born of the real wives? I don't know how you say that. How do you bring all of this together? But it really wasn't until the blessing of Jacob before his death that it was really understood that these four sons that were born of these handmaids would be part of the inheritance and brought truly into the family of Jacob. But those are just thoughts that come into mind. But the point is, again, we want God to be the author of salvation and of all things that pertain unto our salvation and the salvation of the church, as it were.